Welcome into our first edition of the Daily Double podcast for the first ever Keeneland Summer Meet. Each of these five racing days, we're going to be visiting with a different handicapper, some local, some national, getting a little bit of an insight into the racing card, a little bit about how they found their way into this great game of thoroughbred racing. And our first edition is going to be with Nick Tamaro. Nick regularly plays in the major handicapping contests that Keeneland stages, like the one coming up this Saturday that Jim Goodman, Keeneland's director of mutuals, puts on. Nick, I hear you regularly on Steve Bick's racing show on satellite, on Sirius. Where else can folks find your picks and analysis?
Thanks, Tom. I actually, you can find them on Steve Bick's site, which is stevebick.com. That's S-T-E-V-E-B-Y-K.com. And, of course, if you can put up with it, you can get some of my analysis and picks on Twitter. It's at NTAMM1215. And then again, every Friday, usually around 10 a.m. Eastern, is my appearance on Steve's show.
We'll get to today's opening day card at Keeneland here in just a bit. But let's start with a little bit about you and how you became a racing fan and a horse player.
Yeah, it's you know, a story I think that's similar to a lot of people that have gotten in the game via someone else. I like to joke with everybody that either if you're not a rogue that got into it on your own, then you were brought into it by somebody in your family. And I belong to the latter category. My father was a regular at Belmont Aqueduct back in the 70s. He relocated to Houston in the late 70s. I was born in the early 80s. And then there was no racing here in Texas at the time. So he actually took me on a day trip to the fairgrounds in 1991. And that was my first racetrack experience. And from there, you know, my love for the game grew. We lived in the Dallas area at the time. There was a little Class 2 track out west of Fort Worth called Trinity Meadows that we used to go to on a regular basis. And he took me to Santa Anita in 1993. We went to the Super Bowl and to Santa Anita the day before. We went to the Belmont in 93. Julie Crone won that Belmont on Colonial Affair. And by that point, I was hooked. So I was only 9 years old and was already in love with the game and trying to figure out how to spend as much time as I could watching and betting on the races.
I think everybody has their big score stories, probably just as many tough beats. Anything that you can want to share as far as either end of that spectrum?
Yeah, well, in fairness, Tom, I have way more bad beat stories than big score stories.
most of us do.
Exactly. I mean, all can talk about the one that gets away. But yeah, I think the one that I'm most fond of was in 2016. A good friend of mine, Travis Stone, who's the race caller at Churchill Downs, and I had kicked around the idea of pooling some money together to bet the pick fives at Saratoga. And so we got eight people involved that put up anywhere from $1,000 to $2,000 for the meet. And we started betting the pick five every day. And on the closing Saturday of the meet, we had things break our way. It actually could have been a little bit better, but it broke our way well enough that we had $1.50 on a pick five that paid $36,000 for 50 cents. So ended up that our initial investment of about $14,000, when all was said and done at the end of the meet, was worth about $110,000. So that's probably my best group big story. In the race that kicked off that pick five, I won about $13,000 on my own in the trifecta. So it was a good September 4th, I think it was, 2016, was a very, very good day.
As a horse player, how did you develop the approach that you take to play in the races? And, you know, are you a buyer guy, a sheets guy? What are some of your strategies?
I absolutely am a part of the buyer's speed figure making team, and I make buyers for a couple of tracks around the country. I would say as far as speed figures go, I'm a speed figure oriented player. I'm probably more on the types of buyers, and I'm a big Time Form US believer. Somebody, of course, that believes in final time figures, but also wants to. My quest in terms of handicapping is looking at how races are run. And I think that we have become collectively overly results oriented and too focused on who wins races and we don't spend enough time understanding what happened in that race to make it go that way. And I think that's the single most important thing. And that involves pace and trips and all the variables that a lot of times aren't quantified in a running line. And I think when you can really start to drill into some of those, it'll help your horseplay quite a bit. And I think that one of the big things for me that I've learned over time is that if you focus on a specific circuit, then you can really get your hands around everything that goes on there. And you have such an advantage when you can look at a specific race and know in your heart, okay, that was a very strong race that horse is coming out of. And the general public that's looking at that really doesn't. And if you've done the work on watching the replays and really getting entrenched in what happens in the context of a given race, then it certainly gives you a big advantage.
The folks listening to a podcast such as this one are probably more than a casual player. So for the folks that play with some degree of regularity or that really approach it seriously, any common misconceptions that you see that are out there or frequently made mistakes?
I think that a lot of times people are, I think as far as gambling goes, and granted, we consider ourselves horse players much more so than gamblers, you want to be a contrarian as much as you possibly can. So I think there's a lot of taking things at face value that a lot of times can be erroneous. And I think what you really want to do is drill into things and be critical and, you know, try and figure out when you're looking at the context of a race, who ran. Don't just take that result, right? Try and figure out understanding how the pace shook out, how the track's been playing, you know, all of those different things. Where did the leaders end up finishing? Who made the moves from various places that maybe didn't win? And picking apart a specific race that way to determine what you need to do with those horses moving forward. Don't just simply take the results. So I think the biggest misconception that a lot of people have, I think especially people that are getting involved in the game right at this point or at any point, is that they just simply take the results and they base their opinion on that. And I think that's something that's a little too simplistic, and it cuts you off from a lot of the important things that you have to do to fully analyze races and being successful betting them.
Talking with Nick Tamaro here on our Daily Double podcast for the Keeneland Summer Meet. The Bluegrass this weekend will put us another step closer on the road to the Kentucky Derby on Labor Day weekend for the first time. How do you size up the three-year-old picture for the Colts at this point and the Phillies?
It's funny. I mean, we probably would have never imagined something like this ever happening, but I don't think we would have imagined anything that's happened in 2020 ever happening. So it fits with the mode of what's gone on this year. It's unbelievable. And you know what we've seen is that it really, the year has shaken out very similarly as far as the three-year-olds have gone to the way it normally does. You know, normally by this point, there's been a lot of attrition in the three-year-old ranks, and we're looking at you know, what's left for races like the Haskell, the Jim Dandy, the Travers, and we're basically in that same scenario. There's just the Kentucky Derby still yet to be run. So, you know, you have to look at a horse like Tis the Law and appreciate what he's done. Now, I don't want to go overboard because Tis the Law hasn't really run very much. I mean, he's only run three times in 2020, but you know, the goal, especially with the pandemic setting in right around when he won the Florida Derby, was to be as cautious as possible moving forward, to run him in the Belmont, run him in the Travers, and try and get a relatively fresh horse to the Kentucky Derby, and they're certainly on that path. Well, what the extended schedule has done, obviously, is it has allowed somebody like Bob Baffert, who has an arsenal of quality three-year-olds every year, to take some of these later developing horses like a West Coast or Arrogate that we've seen over time. And not that Uncle Chuck or potentially Cezanne are at that level, but these kind of horses would have never made the Derby in a standard year, right? So the fact that they have makes it that much more interesting. And I would say that you know, the Los Alamitos Derby is not necessarily a race that you would consider in a normal year to be prepped for really any kind of big objective, but Baffert has used it as a springboard in the past for horses that have gone on to bigger and better things. And I do think that Uncle Chuck looks pretty impressive. It looks like a horse that really is going to relish additional ground. So that's, I think, the positive part of it. The good thing about the Oaks Fillies is that it looked like a bit of a lackluster crop going into February and March, and now it actually looks really good with Swiss Skydiver and Gamine and Venetian Harbor. These are horses that are of high quality, that have proven themselves to be fast and versatile, and that actually has shaken out quite well. So one of the positives that we can take from this topsy-turvy year.
Let's talk about the opening day card for the Keeneland Summer Meet. We'll start with the allowance feature, a turf sprint, 5.5 on what I would assume would be a pretty firm turf course. As I looked at this, Digital's the morning line favorite, and yet this is a horse that hasn't had a big number last time, a big buyer, 91, but hasn't been on the turf. So what do you make of Digital, and how do you see the race?
Yeah, you know, Progeny of Into Mischief win their turf debuts at a 14% rate. The Dam never tried the turf. She did drop one turf winner from three to try. So, I mean, I wouldn't say that there's any great amount of turf pedigree. I think that this is just an opportunity to get this horse a race at Keeneland going a distance that he wants, which is probably 6 furlongs or less. And so, I mean, Digital is the kind of horse that I want first-time turf horses that are clever. And if Digital is going to be the favorite in this race, I'm not particularly interested. There's not enough pedigree there for me to get excited. Obviously, no matter what time of year you run a Keeneland meet, you're going to see great representation from Wesley Ward. And so Maven is back off the layoff in this spot, having been away now for almost exactly a year, just a few weeks short of a year. And this is a horse that we heard a lot of chatter about in the spring of 2019 as potentially one of his Ascot starters. And while he didn't make Ascot, he is a horse that won a Group 3 overseas sprinting on the turf. So obviously there's a lot of quality there. And I think he'll have plenty of speed, as most Wesley Ward trainees do. He's a horse that showed ample speed last year. And you would imagine he'll be a little bit more keyed up off the layoff. I really like Race Driver in this race. I think that Race Driver is a horse that was disadvantaged by an unfair trip, if that makes sense. But he also had some things go on around him in that race that really made it much more difficult. And I think second off the layoff, he's very, very dangerous. If you watch the replay, he actually broke quite well. And then Florent Giroux kind of dragged him out of the race, and a lot of competition moved in on both sides of him. And then going into the turn, he got steadied briefly as a horse in front of him was tiring. And one of the things about turf sprints that you have to remember in handicapping them is you really can't have anything go wrong if you're going to be coming from off the pace. You just don't have enough time to overcome any kind of obstacle, especially something like being steadied with the 4 furlongs or less to go. And I think that's the kind of thing that Race Driver was saddled with. So I'm hopeful that things go a little bit more cleanly, and I think he's going to be a terrific price as well.
Anything, any other spots you are honing in on for the opening day card?
Yeah, I mean, it's a terrific end to the card. It's a great card from top to bottom. And one of the horses that I'm looking forward to betting is Verve's Humor in the 7th. He's the 10. This is a horse that comes out of a similar starter allowance race at Churchill. And in looking at that race, you'll notice that the wire-to-wire winner, Knight's Cross, got it done sitting on the inside, which, you know, we'll see quite often. Not that Churchill is a track that's biased on a particularly regular basis, but you see a lot of horses do well that ride the inside. Verse Humor made a huge move around the turn and sort of slingshotted past almost the entire field before he hung a little bit in the stretch. And I think Brian Hernandez Jr. sensed that the pace in that race was not particularly strong. I think he probably got a little concerned about the leaders getting away from him. And I just think this horse needs a little bit more patient ride. This is a race that if it stays intact, it looks like there's a lot of pace on paper. I think that really plays into his hands. And I think Julien Leperoux is an ideal fit because he's going to let him settle and make one run. And, the mile is a bit of a quirky distance in that you have that relatively short run to the first turn and then the abbreviated stretch. But with speed being drawn both inside and outside, I think we'll see a pretty spirited early gallop, and that would undoubtedly help a horse like Verve's Humor.
Let's get to a feature of this Daily Double podcast for this summer meet. Keeneland's donating a $100 bankroll to our handicapper that we talk with each day to make a few plays, and any of the winnings will be donated to a charity. So, Nick, give us your $100 worth of plays on the Wednesday card.
I'll tell you what, Tom, I'm going to keep it relatively simple. I'm going to bet 50 to win on the 9 Race Driver in the 8th, and I'm going to bet 30 to win on Verve's Humor in the 7th, and a $20 double of the 2, and hopefully if we get right and it's a full bingo card, then we'll hit both ends of it, get the win bets and the double.
Sounds good. Nick, I appreciate the time, and we'll look for the analysis, the picks, and the commentary on the Steve Bick Show and at the website. And best of luck playing the Keeneland meet or wherever else you are playing this week.
Sounds great, Tom. Thanks so much for having me.